Good morning. I call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, April 27th, 2022. The time is 9:07. Please silence all cell phones. Present today are Senator, Hoffman, Wilson, Willikowski, Olson.
That means I get two votes.
Yeah. Von Imhoff, good morning. And Senator Co-Chair Stedman. On the agenda today, we have HB 28, registration of boats, saltwater sport fishing operation 79, SB 243 is the bill we're going to take up first, power cost equalizations 243. This is the second hearing for 243. Our intention is to consider the committee substitute, cover fiscal notes, look to the will of the committee. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for Senate Bill 243, Finance 32-LS1573/I, as the working document for the committee.
Can I have a brief, please? Okay, we're back on the record. Ms. Shine, I'll object. Ms. Shine, would you introduce yourself and proceed?
Yes. For the record, Aaron Shine, staff to Co-Chair Bishop in the Senate Finance Committee. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the changes between version B and version I, which is before you for consideration, is adding a new section, which is new section 1. That can be found on page 1, line 4, through page 2, line 6. And it amends AS 4245080A2 to remove the 4% nominal target return when investing the power cost equalization endowment fund and replaces investing guidance for the Commissioner of the Department of Revenue with the prudent investor rule. Mr. Chairman, this language was taken from the investment responsibilities of the Alaska Permanent Fund for the board, which can be found in AS 3713120A. And it is very similar language to be invested similarly.
Thank you. Is there further, Senator Stedman?
Just for discussion, Mr. Chairman, could we maybe touch on what we're replacing, that targeted return, and then what the return targets are on this prudent investor rule? How that works is for the public, so they.
Absolutely. Through the Chair, Senator Stedman, currently in statute, the Power Cost Equalization Endowment Fund has a targeted return of 4%. This committee substitute proposes to remove that 4% target and to put the prudent investor rule. And you can find on page 1 through on line 10, it outlines what the prudent investor rule. And if you'd like, Mr. Chairman, I can read that to you or...
We're just waiting for the copy to come around.
Senator Stedman.
Mr. Chairman, I think it would be important to read that. I think it's a distinction. We have the earlier version here on our coffee cups at the table. A lot of us have them, two of them here at the table now. The prudent man rule that was written many, many years ago, a couple of centuries ago, and it's evolved into the prudent investor rule. So I think it would be good because there is a difference.
Absolutely. Through the Chair, Senator Stedman, the prudent investor rule is defined in Section 1 is to be applied for the investment activity of the fund, meaning exercising the judgment and care under the circumstances then prevailing that an institutional investor of ordinary prudence, discretion and intelligence exercise in the designation and management of large investments entrusted to it, not in regard to speculation, but in regard to the permanent disposition of funds, considering preservation of the purchasing power of the fund over time while maximizing the expected total return from both income and appreciation of capital.
Thank you. Further questions or comments, Senator Stedman?
Well, just further explanation. I think initially, and I'd have to go back in the records and have a look where this 4% came from, but clearly that's you know, not applicable to an endowment-style management of the portfolio, that it should be managed very similar to the permanent fund for perpetuity of not only the life of, or growth of the principal after inflation adjusting, but the payout. And with a 4% target, pushes the target rate of return too low, and we're leaving tens of millions of dollars on the table. So I think it's a good amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further questions? Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, just so I'm clear, that this is likely to lead to a higher rate of return?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we believe so. This would be invested in the similar manner as the permanent fund currently. I know that there are targeted returns can vary from year to year, but I believe it's 6.2 currently. And if we were to identify that a 4% return, that would be leaving, or if we kept the statute as is, we would be potentially leaving quite a bit of money on the table for investment return for the power cost equalization endowment fund. So removing a 4% target and similarly identifying the prudent investor rule, the hope is that the fund will be invested in a manner in which would likely return more to the fund.
Senator Wilikowski.
Can you just remind me how the returns on the power cost equalization fund have compared to the permanent fund or the ARM board?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I don't have that information in front of me. I can get that back to you at a later date. I do know that in years past, I don't know that the investment has necessarily followed the 4%, but recently they have been targeting the 4%, and there was potentially some money that the fund wasn't receiving the last years. But for absolute returns, I don't have in front of me. However, I don't know if Curtis Thayer is online. He might be able to identify some of those numbers.
Mr. Thayer?
Yes, Chairman Bishop.
Have you been listening to the line of questioning back and forth between Senator Wilikowski and Ms. Shine, and can you comment?
I can. Chairman Bishop, looking back on a five-year average of the fund, it earned $150 million this year, this current year that we're in, 2022, excuse me. And then last year it was at $48 million, and then it averaged $70 to $74 million, and then about $140 million the year before. That's about a five-year average. Now, it has fluctuated greatly, but part of that is the Department of Revenue in their management of it. One particular year they went extremely conservative, which is the $48 million return. But this year it was $150 million on $1.1 billion.
Senator Wilikowski, is any further follow-up?
I'm wondering if anyone from the Department of Revenue can just comment on how they expect this will change their investment philosophy.
We don't have anybody online at the present time. Senator Wilson?
Yes, Mr. Chair, just to give comment to that, we also looked into changing that 4%. We just found in working with that department that they were just managing just to that 4% and nothing above that. That was just a low bar just to step over, and that they would just stop there and not really put any other type of management or time into the power cost equalization fund. They're just managing to the 4%, so we just felt that taking that limit off would help encourage them to have a higher return for that fund.
Senator Von Imhoff?
Thank you. If I had to guess, it would probably just be less bonds and more equities. It would just rebalance the portfolio. Equities generally yield a higher return but also have higher volatility. So I just wanted to state for the record that higher returns generally means higher risk. So there will be riskier investments, but and that generally means higher volatility, meaning big ups and downs over time. But the goal is to have a net result of returns above inflation over time. So when you look back at average returns, which is what Curtis Thayer talked about, a five-year average. So that's the goal, but it's going to be, you just have higher volatility. And with this inflation, well, it's anybody's guess is what's going to happen in the future. But I just wanted to confirm, Mr. Chairman, and I don't know if Curtis Thayer can answer this, but I just want to confirm the fund is a 5% draw, like the POMV, just confirm that, and it has a five-year average market value look back based on that draw. Can Mr. Thayer confirm that?
Through the chair, Senator Bonnenhoff, that is correct. I did actually manage to find that exact file. In 2017, the annual earnings was $112 million. In 2018, it was $76 million. 2019, $74 million. And then in FY 2020, it was $48 million. And then in FY 21, which is available for this year, was $150 million. But it is the 5% and the 5% draw.
Senator Stedman?
I thought the look back was 3 years smoothing on it, not 5 year. And it just, that smoothing mechanism just does that, smooths out the withdrawal, so it's more predictable, much less, that's the way a permanent fund is. I think this portfolio has 3 year look back, so it's a little more volatile.
Ms. Shine?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, that's correct. The percent of market value draw from the power cost equal endowment fund is a three-year look back, not a five-year look back. But it is 5%.
Draw.
Further questions before I remove my objection? Seeing none, I remove my objection. Sir. Any further objection to adopting the CS? Seeing none, the CS is adopted. Does everyone have their fiscal note? Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, Alaska Energy Authority is the appropriation. The allocation is to the same. The Alaska Energy Authority Power Cost Equalization Program, OMB component numbers 2602. Its fund source is 1169 PCE endowment DGF funds. In 23, it's 15 million. And in the out years, it's the same number, 15,694.8 going out through 28. Okay. Any further committee discussion? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the committee substitute for Senate Bill 243 Finance 32-LS1573-I move from the committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations to the next committee of referral.
Thank you. Any objections to moving the bill, Senator?
I just have one question.
One question.
So this bill, I'm assuming then we heard it at one point and we had public testimony on it?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any objections for moving the bill from committee? Seeing none, the bill moves from committee. We'll take just a brief at ease while we sign the document and get ready for the next presentation. Okay, we're back on the record. This is the first hearing for HB 28. That is the registration of boats and exemptions. Our intention is to hear a bill introduction, sectional analyses, take invited in public testimony, and Representative Tarr and Thatcher Brower, I don't know, I butchered it, but come on up and introduce yourselves for the record, and welcome to Senate Finance, and proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Representative Garen Tarr from District 19 in Anchorage.
Good morning, Co-Chair Bishop and members of the Finance Committee. Thatcher Brower, staff to represent Tarr in the House Fisheries Committee.
Thank you for the opportunity to present House Bill 28 to you. Did I get the number right here? 28, yes. This is a Fisheries Committee bill, and I think, you know, that just reflects the importance of dealing with this issue on a statewide basis. So folks might remember the issue of derelict vessels coming up going all the way back to 2013 when there were a couple of boats that tried to go into the Homer Harbor, and the harbor master there had to say, you know, stop, because they were in pretty bad shape and they were concerned they were just going to come in and be left there. That's eventually what happened with them. Around that time, there was also just other reports around the state. And Bethel, there's an area where there were up to 30 abandoned vessels there, you know, and other ports across the state. It was an issue. And the basic issue is, you know, who's responsible for cleaning up this vessel once it's abandoned, and, you know, it's just this problem to deal with. So there was legislation that was originally introduced. Both Senator Michicki and Representative Seaton had worked on this legislation back in 2017-2018. That legislation, Senate Bill 92, did pass. It was known as the Derelict Vessel Bill. And once that bill went into effect, what happened was it caused the boat owners to have to both register a vessel with the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission and the Department of Motor Vehicles. So in your packet, there is a chart that I think is just kind of the easiest way to summarize what happens with this legislation. And so what happens with this legislation is we remove that duplicative requirement of having to both register with the DMV and the CFEC, and we just leave it. If it's a documented vessel that's registered with the CFEC, then that suffices for the state level registration. And so what that ensures is that, you know, all vessels will be registered through one or the other option. So we'll always have a state managed database to provide the information we need necessary for cleanup. Just late yesterday, we received an email from the Homer Port and Harbor, the harbor master there, expressing support for this legislation. And, you know, I think I'll just, if I could, Mr. Chairman, read it, because we didn't get a chance to share it with you, but they just, the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators support HB 28, which will exempt Coast Guard documented commercial fishing vessels that are currently registered with the CFEC from having to register with the DMV. Alaska Harbor Masters must have access to accurate ownership information on vessels that use or are requesting the use of our facilities. In times past, we had the ability to track vessel ownership of Coast Guard documented vessels through the Federal Documentation Center, but that resource is no longer available to us. However, tracking ownership of documented commercial vessels through the CFEC gives harbor staff access to accurate vessel ownership. So, you know, we won't lose any of the important information that we need. It'll either be covered through the DMV or the CFEC, and so we will be able to do a better job with tracking that. And so those are my introductory comments, Mr. Chairman, and if I could then just turn it over to Mr. Brower to go over the sectional and specifics of the bill.
Before we do that, any questions? Representative Tarr, before we pass that off, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Tarr, I guess one of the questions I have is, in my district, we've got a number of many small vessels that are out there that are involved with commercial fisheries. Is there an exemption for the size that's there? So some of these people that are living out in rural Alaska that, you know, essentially have a small fishing vessel or a vessel of their own, that they've got to still comply with this registration?
Through the chair to Senator Olson, on the chart, there are the different sort of categories of registration and then the different types of vessels. And so the smaller vessels typically, I think, fall in the undocumented category. And so that in that second line there, you can see that they already probably do the CFEC registration, so they would be covered under that.
Follow-up, Senator Olson?
With all due respect, Representative Tarr, many of these vessels are not even involved in fisheries. They're just something that people go out and go and go berry picking with, or go out and have picnics with. Or it's more of a like we have a car in our here in the city. I guess is there an exemption for that?
Through the chair to Senator Olson, I think those would fall under the undocumented recreational and commercial vessels not registered with CVC. And those were the ones that, when the legislation passed a few years ago, did become required to be registered with DMV. And that is a three-year registration once they register that vessel.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Brower, you want to continue with the sectional analyses?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, Thatcher Brower, staff to Representative Garen Tarr. Section 1 of the bill amends AS05.25.005I to exempt documented commercial fishing vessels with a valid certificate of documentation issued by the United States Coast Guard and a license issued by the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission under AS16.05.490 or AS16.05.530 from the provision that requires owners to register their vessel with the Division of Motor Vehicles. Section 2 adds a new section that assesses an additional annual $8 registration fee for documented vessels licensed with the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission beginning January 1, 2023. And this is in lieu of the current three-year $24 fee that is collected by the Division of Motor Vehicles. The fee will be accounted for separately as provided in AS05.25.096B to be made available for use by the Department's Administration, Natural Resources, and Commerce and Economic Development for both boating safety programs and the Derelict Vessel Fund. Section 3 adds a new section to uncodified law, which requires the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission to waive the $8 registration fee for calendar years the vessel owners have already paid the Division of Motor Vehicles. And this section ensures that vessel owners who have already paid for their three years of registration don't have to pay an $8 annual fee for cover those years. Section 4 adds a new section to the uncodified law that states that Section 1 of this Act is retroactive to January 1, 2022. And Section 5 establishes an immediate effective date.
Questions? Senator Wilson.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have a question actually for the DMV.
Let me see. Just a minute. Senator Wilson, we'll get Jeffrey Schmitz online. As soon as he acknowledges himself on the record, then you can proceed, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Schmitz, the Division of Motor Vehicles, are you with us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, for the record, my name is Jeffrey Schmitz. I am the director of Alaska DMV.
Senator Wilson has a question.
Mr. Smith, I just have a question in terms of licensing and registration for boats currently. Does the DMV currently have enough tags and registrations to continue this process? My understanding was that certain tags, licenses, and are on back order, and just wondering how this will affect that process.
Mr. Chair, committee members, again, Jeff Schmitz, DMV director. In terms of inventory, I'm not aware of any current inventory issues that we have per se. I believe this bill, transfers the responsibility for the collection of the fees to the commercial fisheries and away from DMV. I've not been informed from my staff of any particular inventory issues per se to directly answer your question.
Follow-up?
Yes, a follow-up then. I would suggest you please reach out to your staff as I do have folks that do have vessels over the 25-foot mark, and myself trying to go down and register a boat was told that they're out of those type of tags and registrations, and they're also out of Z-tags and also those other plates, and just wondering how this is going to affect these fishermen. For this upcoming season, if they can't show proof of registration, I just don't want them to be stopped unnecessarily for this process. So just if they could follow up with us at the committee at a later date, Mr. Chair, that would be wonderful.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this bill's heading in the right direction for this exemption, but I'm not so sure that the derelict vessel legislation shouldn't be taken, looked at, and frankly repealed. Those funds that are collected are now swept into the general fund. In essence, some of us were concerned at the very time that was implemented that that was just a tax on boat owners. It's not going to generate enough money to do have any impact on derelict vessels. And I'd like to have an accounting, Mr. Chairman, of the revenue collected and where it was spent. Because I'm unaware of any cleanup on any beaches from that fund. And it would be nice to see that, and I'm not so sure if we shouldn't expand this bill to repeal that whole tax and streamline the system so the public isn't just having a tax imposed on them disguised as a derelict vessel fee. And I don't have issues with the harbors knowing who's the legitimate owner of any vessel. The registration of any vessel of any consequence is either with the CFEC or the Coast Guard. And you get into some junk boats that are transferred, and that can be dealt with in other mechanisms. So, and when the Coast Guard pulls you over, they ask you for documentation of your vessel, and you have to have it renewed every year. So I think this cleans up an issue that's problematic, but I think if we're going to clean it up, let's clean it up. Let's not disguise, call it a fee when it's actually a tax, and if the money's to go to derelict vessels, let's see that it goes to derelict vessels in a meaningful way. We're just not, taxing our vessel owners and then using the money willy-nilly because it gets swept into the general fund.
Brief fees. We're back on the record. Representative Tarr, we've distributed the document, and if you would want to walk us through that, that'd be appreciative.
Mr. Chairman, can I just make a comment first?
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking of derelict vessels, something that is really plaguing the port of Nome and those places that are ripe with people that are having these small vessels that are going out to go ahead and dredge in the Bering Sea. You see that on the TV channels where you've got these vessels that can barely float that are out there brought up by people that are less than virtuous in some of their mentalities. And I can see why this derelict vessel is an issue, and it is an issue up in the port area, because that is the port that's around there. It clogs the port. That means the fisheries boats that are coming in with commercial fishery catches are affected by not enough room and those kind of issues. And so because of that, I want to say that, you know, something like this is certainly necessary. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to ask Mr. Brower to walk through that, because he had worked with the department on preparing the document.
I'll get it real close because the type's kind of small.
And for the record, Thatcher Brower, staff representative, and we can provide a new document with the print a little bit larger. And I do apologize, it's a little bit dated, but I guess it speaks to what Co-Chair Stedman said. So for FY20, the total registration and title fees collected were $524,503. And of that, $300,000 went to the Department of Natural Resources. And it's my understanding that much of that money that went to the Department of Natural Resources was used for the boating safety programs. And additionally, $196,900 went to the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And as you can see in this document, that was passed along the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, again, for boating safety. And that only left $27,603, and that's what was in the derelict vessel fund. And I believe we have Christy Coles with the Department of Natural Resources, who can speak to the department to the derelict vessel fund and may know the current balance in that fund.
And you said that was Christy Coles?
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
Is that accurate? Okay. Ms. Coles says you're the Chief Operations Division of Mining, Land, and Water, and we have, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. If you put yourself on the record, and please proceed with the question that staff to Representative Tarr punted your way.
So for the record, my name is Christy Collis. I am the Division Operations Manager for the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Mining, Land, and Water. And forgive me, could the question be repeated?
Please. Repeat the question, sir.
Mr. Collis, I guess I'm curious if you know the current balance in the derelict vessel fund, and maybe you could describe how the department manages the fund.
All right. So right now, the fund, last we were told, was there was now about $92,000 in the fund. We've also been told it's on a list of non-sweepable funds. The money has not been spent at this time. We are trying to build a regulation package to allow or to define how those funds are going to be utilized. It's not just the department that can utilize the funds. They can actually be given to local communities that are looking for cleanup efforts and might also be looking to utilize those funds.
Thank you. Senator Wilson and then Senator Stedman.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify, this piece of legislation that created the fund was passed in 2017, and it's 2022, and it's 4 years later to develop a regulation package to the use of the funds. Is that correct? I guess that's for Ms. Coles.
Ms. Coles?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that is correct. It was passed, I believe, in 17 or 18, and you are correct. We have not created a regulation package due to other regulation packages being ahead of this one. It is a priority of the department to get the regulation package put together to start finding ways to move these funds into different communities and efforts to clean up abandoned and derelict vessels.
Thank you.
Senator Stedman.
Well, I would like a clarification on the accounting. Clearly, this table goes back before the existence of the subject, the question of the derelict vessel surcharge. It picks up 15 and 16, and from the testimony, it didn't exist back then. I don't recall it existing back then. I would like to know how much money in each year was collected on the $5 and where the money went. What communities or what harbors or what vessels, and I understand there's no regulations written so far, But I think this, my personal opinion, that section is just a boondoggle. So let's get some clarification on the accounting. And I do, if I recall correctly, the testimony was it's non-sweepable. So that's, I guess, a positive. But I'd like to have it isolated, Mr. Chairman. And we can track this like we track many other funds and uses of funds.
So, Ms. Coles, you heard the request from the co-chair of finance for the accounting from DNR's side of the house on this registration fee. DCEED is not online, but we will get that same accounting question posed to them to present to the committee. Senator Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondering, in the you said the funds have about $90,000 in this past 3 years. What do you know the average cost it would, let's say, to clean up a fiberglass 34-foot boat, 36-foot boat that might be in the Homer Harbor half sunk?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, you know, it depends on the size and where it's at. I mean, I know that most policies, if vessel owners do have insurance policies, usually it's a minimum of $1 million. We've seen that easily spent very quickly just based off of locations that are a little bit further out. If it's within the harbor, it's probably going to be a little bit more reasonable. We've had things cost us well over $1 million to have cleanup efforts occur, but it all varies on location.
Mr. Chairman.
And depth.
Senator Stedman.
My recollection of the derelict vessels isn't to deal with so much, per se, somebody that has a boat half sunk in a harbor. I think my recollection is the harbors wanted to know who owns the boats, and I don't think that's too difficult to figure out without that derelict vessel piece of legislation, frankly. But it's to deal with boats that are on the shorefront and up and down the rivers that aren't in the harbors, that are just derelict boats sitting there collecting seaweed or what have you on the beaches to go out and clean those up. So I would like to know what vessels have been cleaned up with these money, what derelict vessels. Are we just, again, collecting money to collect money?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, at this time, we haven't used the derelict vessel funds to clean up vessels, but in the past, we have actually used state funds to clean up. We do have one I remember clearly from 2012, Jackaloff Bay. There was two vessels actually that sunk within Jackaloff Bay, and there's oyster farms in that area, so there are critical habitats and infrastructure that we were trying to protect. Coast Guard was able to come in and raise those vessels, but because the owner was not able to pay or have the funds to have those scuttled to the local harbor, we did pay to have those scuttled over and also stored at a dry dock. Those easily cost us, I think, $30,000-$40,000 range to pay for those costs, and we were never refunded by the owner of those vessels. So we have not used the derelict vessel funds at this time, but by all means, we plan to find or develop regulations to be able to use those funds for situations such as that in the future.
Follow-up, Senator Stedman?
I think my recollection also, and I'm not a marine attorney, but if a vessel is sunk in navigable waters and imputing the traffic flow, the Coast Guard steps in. And if it's not, if it's just on the beach on DNR's land out of the way, that's a different matter. Again, my recollection of the conversation of this piece of legislation was to deal with those instances. It wasn't to step in and deal with a vessel that's restricting navigable waters. So I think we need to take a look at this, Mr. Chairman. My concern is we're collecting money from the citizens for a specific purpose. That purpose is not being used. The regulations are not being written. And it's a problem for a lot of my constituents that are paying these fees.
Thank you. Senator, excuse me, Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. When can we expect these regulations to be written that were supposed to be written 4 years ago?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we have a list of regulation packages that we are working through. These particular regulations are probably a couple years out before they would be completed.
Follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
Can the committee get a list of the regulations that have come before this in the last 4 years and the regulations that you expect will come before this for the next couple of years as well?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, yes, we can provide that information to the committee.
Follow up, Senator.
Is it, how often is it that DNR doesn't issue regulations? It sounds like you're out 2 years, it's already been 4 years. Is that a common practice in DNR not to issue regulations on bills that have passed for 6 years?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, it's not due to a lack of our efforts of getting regulation packages put together. We do go through a public process that can be time consuming. We've had some recent regulation packages that were controversial, water regulations that actually garnered a lot of comments. So we do have to provide responses to all of those comments, so it can be very time-consuming. And as I stated, we've got a backlog of those regulation packages that we're trying to get in place. So I wouldn't say it's a practice that we are trying to continue, but as we continue to work with the public and trying to build regulation packages using public input, agency input, it does take time.
Follow up, Senator.
I'd like to see, Mr. Chairman, a list of all the regulations that are outstanding that the department, I mean, I know it's not related to this, but I think this is some pretty disturbing information that we've got regulations that aren't being written for 6 years on statutes that have passed. So I'd like to see all these regulations that are hanging out there the department has chosen not to put out for public comment. Could we get a list of that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, yes, we will provide you a list. And just to clarify, too, many of the regulations that we are working through are updates to current regulation packages. So a lot of the programs that we have in place are still being implemented. We just have updates to those regulations as they do become outdated with time. But I will ensure that the committee receives a list of regulation packages that we have completed and those that we are still working through.
Ms. Coles, and I assume, but I'll just ask you straight up, when you provide that information to the committee, you have it by discipline, meaning mining land and water, mining regs, this boat regs, you know, could you split it out by category for us, please?
Chair Bishop, yes, I could do that. I do speak for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, so I will have to work with the other divisions within the department to try and gather theirs. The Division of Mining, Land, and Water has a specific amount of regs that we're working through. On the department level, I am not sure what amount of regs they have that they're working through.
Thank you. Senator Stedman and Senator Wilson.
I think on this subject matter, the legislature is always standing by to help the department if we have derelict vessels of consequence through the appropriation process for cleanup, which is substantially more expensive than the fees being generated here. But with that being said, you know, one thing we should consider after listening to Senator Wilikowski point out his concerns over the length of time it takes to do regulations. Maybe when we do these type of legislation, we shouldn't allow them to collect any fees until they do the regulations. Because I think if it wasn't for this hearing today, the subject matter wouldn't even have come up for I don't know how long. And I do have one quick question for the
Vermont. Question, then Senator Wilson.
There's a what appears to be an abandoned, although we know who owns it, a barge with a camp on it, camp meaning you know, a building like a house for crew quarters or what have you, sitting in Catlin Bay on DNR land. Are you familiar with that? And if you are, is there any time frame to make sure that that does not become a derelict vessel and we don't get the bill, the state, to refloat that barge and dispose of that particular item?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I'm not aware specifically of that vessel. We do have a section within the Division of Mine, Land, and Water called the Statewide Abatement of Impaired Lands. They monitor all vessels, reports of vessels that are potentially derelict or could be potentially derelict. So I will check with them to see if they are aware of that vessel. And if they are, if that vessel has an authorization to be anchored in that location for over 14 days.
Follow up?
Yes, I'd appreciate that. They have been notified. We've sent them a couple emails, and we're talking a couple years, not days. And I just want to make sure that that issue is addressed before the termination of the contract for the adjoining road project. I think it's important. Because my concern is the state will get a significant bill put to them to refloat and move that plus disposal or what have you. And I just don't think we should be exposed to that.
Senator? Okay. All right. Any further questions before we go to invited testimony?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Brower, I guess this question is for you. Under this bill, what are the penalties for people that don't abide by either the regulations that are in process or if they're not unregistered voters out there, especially those in my district that are usually smaller vessels?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I'll have to check with the Department of Public Safety and see what the fines might be. I don't know what they would be after off the top of my head. I do want to say that the Department of Public Safety has not been enforcing this current duplicative registration requirement. They haven't been requiring commercial fishing vessels to also register with the Division of Motor Vehicles the past couple of years since SB 92 went into effect. But I'll have to check and find what the penalties might be.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No further questions.
All right. Are we ready for invited testimony? Invited testimony is open. We'll go to the United Fishermen of Alaska, Tracy Welch. Are you there?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for scheduling today's hearing, and thanks for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Tracy Welch, and I'm here today representing United Fishermen of Alaska. UFA is the statewide commercial fishing trade association representing 37 commercial fishing organizations participating in fisheries throughout the state and federal fisheries off Alaska's coast. UFA supports House Bill 28. House Bill 28 would remove the need for additional vessel registration with the Department of Motor Vehicles as required by Senate Bill 92 and provide an exemption for documented vessels licensed with a CFEC, thereby eliminating the need for duplicative registration. One of the main objectives Senate Bill 92 set out to accomplish was create a state-managed database that could be used to determine the ownership of abandoned vessels. A database for active commercial vessels already exists and is housed within the CFEC. Currently, all active vessels participating in state fisheries are required to be licensed with CFEC. CFEC licensing includes an owner's name, current address, vessel dimension, make, model, and a host of other identifying information about the vessel. When a vessel licenses with CFEC, the vessel is provided with a permanent ADF&G number that is required to be displayed clearly and visibly on both sides of the vessel. The vessel also receives an aluminum triangle plate with that same ADF&G number stamped on it and is also required to be displayed on the side of the vessel. Vessel owners must renew yearly with the CFEC to receive a current year decal that is to be affixed to the triangle. During the yearly renewal process, owners are required to verify their contact and vessel information. These requirements and markings all contribute to being able to identify an individual vessel and its owner. All of the information associated with a given commercial vessel is readily available to the public in a state-managed database. The database is easily searchable and consistently updated. Vessels licensed with CFEC are well documented here within the state of Alaska. Adoption of House Bill 28 will still serve the purposes of Senate Bill 92, which is to maintain a record of commercial fishing vessels in a state-managed database, while eliminating the need for a duplicative registration and easing the burden on commercial fishermen here in Alaska. Thank you once again for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Senator Stedman has a question. Ms. Welch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to go back and recollection, of course, it's, what, 5 years or so, or 6 years, so sometimes the memory isn't as good as you'd like it. But as I recall, weren't the commercial fishing industry told they weren't going to have this double registration issue at hand when we passed the derelict vessel bill? This wasn't going to be the outcome of it. And if that's in fact true, then this bill wouldn't be needed, or that information at the time was an error. Can you help me with the history of that?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, this is prior to my time, but my understanding through talking with a few other industry folks is that there was a little bit of confusion. We thought that it wasn't going to be part of, that this wasn't going to be wrapped up in this database collection effort. But there was a little bit of interpretation issue with the way the statute was written. So we're just trying to do a cleanup effort here, and I think there were some very valid points made regarding the fee structure and the fee collections. But if this isn't fixed this year, you know, we're back to having people have to register. So we're just doing a cleanup effort, and hopefully we can fix some other things along the way.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, the point I'm trying to make, some of us pointed this out when that bill was passed, that this was a problem and not needed. So I'd like, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have that old record researched for the past testimony on this so we have a full record in front of us on consideration, because as I recall, this subject was in the middle of this table at that time, and we were told that's not the problem. It doesn't exist, and here it exists today, several years later, in spades.
Thank you. Any further questions of Ms. Welch before we go to public testimony? Seeing none, invited testimony is closed. Public testimony is now open. It appears we have one public testifier online, Mr. James Squires from Rural Delta. Mr. Squires, can you hear us? Put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Yes, good morning. My name is James Squires from Rural Deltana. I'm a former mariner that circumnavigated the globe in a U.S. Coast Guard documented sailing vessel and lived aboard for over 20 years. My comments will resonate with some of the comments made by Co-Chair Stedman earlier. With HB 28 before you, this is a great opportunity to correct an additional injustice that resulted from the implementation of SB 92. HB 28 needs to be amended to exclude all United States Coast Guard documented vessels as it was before SB 92, as exempt from the numbering and registration provisions of this section. Under SB 92, we have unnecessarily increased the size, scope, and footprint of government with a duplicitous and onerous system that affects private U.S. Coast Guard documented vessels and the DMV. This can now be easily corrected by exempting, once again, private U.S. Coast Guard documented vessels. Since SB 92 passed, it's my understanding that no funds have directly gone towards derelict removal, which is what was sold to legislators. The limited funds have been spirited off for other purposes. SB 92 increased the size, scope, and footprint of government indefinitely. It placed an additional cost and burden on DMVs. It increased the burden and chaos to all U.S. Coast Guard documented vessels. It increased the burden and chaos to the commercial fishing industry. It placed an additional burden on troopers, Alaskans for a de minimis fee. It did not prevent or fix the derelict challenge. HB 28 should have a simple amendment to remove the duplicity of private U.S. Coast Guard documented vessels. And that concludes my testimony.
Thank you. Was anyone in the room wishing to testify on HB 28? Seeing none, public testimony is closed. Any further discussion before we set the bill aside? Seeing none, Representative Tarr. Mr. Brower, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the hearing today. And, you know, in terms of recreating the history, Senator Stedman, we tried to sort of understand what happened, misinterpretation or whatnot. And I'm sorry, we never could sort of resolve that in terms of what got us from there to here today. And on the points about the derelict vessel fund, you know, we didn't really consider that much in the House, but we're very open to that. You know, this is a committee bill, largely impacts the coastal areas much more than mine. So, you know, very open to the suggestions that you have in terms of improving what may have been a well-intentioned effort to create a derelict vessel program but is not functioning in the way people had. So very open to your suggestions that, like I say, just hadn't so much come up in the House, but more focused on that duplicative registration requirement and trying to remove that so there's no, you know, confusion coming into this season. Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Well done. Okay, we're going to go to our next action item on the agenda today is HB 79, Saltwater Sport Fishing Operator Guides. This will be the first hearing of HB 79. And our intention is to hear bill introduction, sectional analysis, take public testimony, set the bill aside. Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang and Ms. Rachel Hanke, ledge liaison, please come to the table, put yourselves on the record, and proceed.
Good morning, Senator, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Doug Vincent Lang, and I am the commissioner for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Thank you for the opportunity to speak about HB 79 legislation that was introduced by the governor and is a department priority. With this bill, the department would like to reinstate the saltwater licensing and reporting requirements. The sport fish guide and operator's license were first adopted during the 2003 through 2004 legislative session and took effect in 2005 and remained in effect through December 31st, 2014, when they expired due to a sunset clause. This legislation was passed based on the urging of both the fresh and saltwater guides who were looking to professionalize their industry. During the 2015-2016 legislative session, only the saltwater licensing and reporting requirements were reinstated with a sunset of 2018. The legislation stripped the freshwater piece from the legislation, and the department supported this, as we were not using the freshwater information for in-season assessment of fisheries. And we were seeing minor logbook violations, for example, an error in the reporting of the number of grayling release, result in loss of concession programs, notably on federal lands. This legislation sunsetted in 2018. The legislature provided some bridge funding through UGF, but that has since gone away. As such, we have no legislation in place to collect fees to pay for the Marine Logbook Program as of now. Logbook data has been collected by the department from the saltwater sport fishing businesses and guides since 1998 and is critical to uphold the state's U.S.-Canada Pacific Salmon Treaty obligations, providing data to the International Pacific Halibut Commission crucial to making allocation decisions. It is also critical for the North Pacific Fishery Management Council for managing federal fisheries, avoiding duplicative reporting mechanisms and undue burden on the charter fishing industry. Logbook data also supports a myriad of additional critical uses, including but not limited to state fishery monitoring and management, advisory announcements and emergency orders, the Alaska Board of Fisheries process, advisory committees, external communication, statewide harvest survey estimation verification, fisheries disaster declarations, Federal Subsistence Board processes, land use and plant permitting, operational planning, and exemption from the NOAA Saltwater Registry, all of which are included in the logbook use summary provided in your packets. Let me give you a real example of the utility of this information in the management of saltwater fisheries. During COVID, we saw significant decreases in tourism across Alaska, which resulted in significant reductions of saltwater charter boat fishing. We used data from the logbook program to show that we would be significantly below our quotas for halibut and were able to use this data to relax the regulations enacted by the International Pacific Halibut Commission. This resulted in additional opportunity and participation in halibut charter fisheries, mainly by Alaskans. This provided a needed economic boost to the charter fisheries and local economies. Fees collected as part of this bill would provide the data necessary to manage marine charter fisheries off Alaska. These fisheries support somewhere in the neighborhood of 250,000 angler days of effort and contribute over $1.5 million to the state's economy. In sum, the department supports this bill as introduced by the governor and sees it as a necessary tool to fund and manage saltwater charter fisheries. We urge your support in moving the bill out of committee. Thank you. The committee would like, Ms. Hanke can walk you through a sectional analysis of the bill, and I'm available for any questions you may have.
Any questions of the commissioner before we have Ms. Hanke walk us through the sectional analysis? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would agree with the commissioner. It's very critical that the department understands the pressure on all our fisheries, or you won't be able to manage them. And they'll get out of control and we'll lose them. So can you help me a little bit with the termination or the non-renewal of this several years ago and the logbook data as far as is there gaps or no gaps, or what's the status of that?
So we have continued the logbook program under a registration program adopted by the Alaska Board of Fisheries, but the registration program doesn't have a fee associated with it to pay for the logbook program. But given the obligations that we've had, we've just absorbed that into our operational budget, but it's coming at a cost of other things that we're doing. So we've gone back and tried to make electronic reporting and other things. All that's coming at a cost, and so we've worked with the industry to try to figure out how to recover some of that cost, and I think you'll hear letters of support coming back or testimony asking to fund this program so we can continue to collect this information in the future and modernize it and make it more timely through electronic reporting.
Follow-up?
Well, before we get into just on I see there's some data in the packet or letter on one area of the state, but can we get from the department kind of the allocation of registered guides and sport fishing efforts around the state so we can get an idea of the impact in all our regions? I think that's important for us to keep track of also. And I know for my district, it's very significant being on the coast of the ocean, and even the interior islands have significant amount of guided sport fish and unguided for that matter.
Yeah, certainly we can provide that information to you about the breakdown of saltwater guides across the state of Alaska from our existing program.
And please provide that to my office so we can distribute it to the entire table, please. Did I see another question at the table? No. Okay, Ms. Hanke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Rachel Hanke, legislative liaison for the Department of Fish and Game. Section 1 establishes the license fees, which is $100 for the resident guide license, $200 for the operator, and also $200 for the combined operator guide license, and also $200 for the non-resident guide license, $400 for the non-resident operator license or non-resident operator and guide combined license. Section 2 is the largest section of the bill, which provides the licensing requirements for all the license types and has requirements such as business license, first aid certification requirements, insurance requirements. It also establishes the law book and statute. It establishes penalties for violations of the chapter and provides definitions. All of these licensing provisions remain unchanged from what was in statute most recently. Section 3 adds the license type to Title 25. Section 4 is uncodified law directing the Department of Fish and Game to prepare a report for the legislature proposing solutions to gathering harvest data for the saltwater rental and unguided fishing industry due December 1st, 2023. Section 5 is the effective date of January 1, 2023.
Questions from committee? Senator Wilson.
Thank you. So currently I just want to get an understanding here. The logbooks are already issued, and it's already a requirement. You just want funding to basically assure that you could process the information?
Yeah, through the chair, what we're trying to do is seek funding to implement this program and ensure that we can continue it into the future. So we are collecting the logbook program, but we're trying to make it electronic, and we're struggling to find the funds to modernize that logbook and provide that information. We're also trying to seek federal funding for portions of it, but largely been unsuccessful in some of those attempts. So this is basically to continue this program moving forward and provide the funding sources for it.
Follow up?
And so just to get a better understanding, it's about $900 or $1 million a year in revenue to implement a electronic ongoing fees to manage an ongoing database?
To register to license the guides that would be done, the businesses that would be done, to issue the logbooks and make that information available in season and post season to the entities that we're reporting to.
Okay.
Follow up?
No.
Do you have another one? Senator Stedman.
I got a question, and I kind of need some, I guess, some help or guidance. You know, my district, we have, I don't know, it's going to be one of the top guided areas in the state. Prince of Wales and Baranoff Island and off Chichikov and other areas inland. But we also have a lot of fat cats from the states come up with very significant sized boats, very nice boats. Some of them hang around all summer long, cycling their friends or their employees or what have you in and out, and do a lot of fishing, not dissimilar to somebody running a lodge or some of these boats that do the, don't have a land lodge, but they actually have boats that just cruise around southeast and do that fishing. So where's the, can you help me with, and it might be even, you know, later on or whatever after the meeting, but help me with how to differentiate that issue between the, you know, a fellow that comes up here with a 40-foot or a 100-foot boat and cycles people in and out, even though they're all their buddies, so they say, versus a guy that's got the green sticker on their boat and, you know, is doing the 7-day, you know, fishing, boat rides, ecotourism or what have you, or 2 weeks or whatever. Can you help me with that?
Yeah, through the chair. So the way this program operates is the definition of a guide is compensation for services. So if there's any compensation going back to that vessel that's being used to cycle out-of-state anglers on that boat, then there would be a requirement for that vessel to obtain a guide license and have a logbook on board. If there's no compensation, then that would be that harvest would be captured through the statewide harvest survey as an unguided harvest.
Okay, and then just, again, it might be kind of getting in the weeds, but does that in compensation, does that include, you know, like groceries and fuel, or if Senator Wilson was, you know, in Washington and he, you know, worked for me or something and came up and you know, I charged him out of his salary or his bonus for the year, whatever, versus the helping pay for the groceries he consumes, assuming he can eat quite a bit. He can't catch fish to eat fish, or the fuel. Is that, can
yeah,
assist me in that?
Yeah, through the chair. It's direct compensation to assist that angler catching fish. So I would say if you're providing fuel and you're going out with somebody who's guiding you out in that activity and taking you to a fishing spot, that would require a guide license.
Senator Hoffman, did you have a question?
Well, along the same lines, between those that are providing indirect services, I think for personal use, I think that they're covered, but for family and friends, but the indirect use for particularly those from out of state, I think needs to be addressed. And I'm wondering if you might comment on modifying this bill to say that those residents, out-of-state residents that are providing indirect services need to have licenses.
Through the chair, this is the first time this issue has been raised, so I haven't really given it a great deal of thought on how to deal with indirect services, especially by non-residents. I'd have to check with law and determine about how the Commerce Clause may come into that because of it may, if you bring that into a business, how you're treating non-residents versus residents under the Commerce Clause. So I'll give that a little bit of thought, Senator, and I'll get back to you on that one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Senator Wilson?
Based on the last bill, prompts this question now. Are the regulations already written for this since it's restoring the program, or would you need to write new regulations for this?
This is restoring the program, so the regulations are largely written.
Thank you.
Further questions before we go to public testimony? Seeing none.
Thank you.
Yep. Just hang on. Just, I want you guys to stay right there for a second, please. We're going to open public testimony. If anyone in the room wishing to testify? Anyone online wishing to testify? We've closed public testimony.
Any further committee conversation? Any closing comments, Commissioner?
No. Thank you very much for your time.
You're excused. Thank you. All right. You're going to set this bill aside. And we have a tentative meeting scheduled at 1 p.m. today. Okay. And we are adjourned at 10:20.